Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Lost Roman Heroes podcast. My name is Matthew.
And my name is Matteo.
We are serious nerds for Rome, and we are father and son.
Together on the Lost Roman Heroes podcast, we dive deep into the history of Rome, from its origin story starring Aeneas of Troy to its death with Constantine the 11th, uncovering Rome's greatest heroes along the way and ranking them.
There are plenty of great podcasts on the big men in Rome's history, guys like Caesar, Augustus, and Constantine, but that's not us. We're making this podcast to shed a light on Rome's forgotten heroes. From Cincinnatus to Scipio, from Aurelian to Belisarius and beyond, you will not believe the gems that we uncover. So please come join the Legion of Lost Roman Heroes and listen to us wherever you get your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, or find us at www.lostromanheroes.com.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the History of Byzantium, episode 286, Vantage Point. Welcome back to the narrative. We last left the Romans, watching on sadly as their capital city was sacked by the men of the Fourth Crusade. Before we move forward, let's just remind ourselves of who is on the chessboard and where they are situated. The sitting emperor, when the Latins arrived, was Alexius Angelos Komnenos, the brother of Isaac Angelos, who'd ruled before him. These two brothers were essentially in charge of the state for the 20 years leading up to the Fourth Crusade. They oversaw a period of chaos, decline, and disintegration. Provincial governors all over the empire had begun to rebel, but rather than try to seize the center, they began to cordon off their own regions and keep tax revenue for themselves. The most serious rebellion was that of the revived Bulgarian Empire, which essentially took over all Roman lands north of the Hemus Mountains. But as the Latins approached Constantinople, several other rebels in Greece and Anatolia had seized cities for themselves. Angelos Komnenos abandoned Constantinople after the first Crusader attack. He knew that the aristocracy was going to turn on him in order to appease the Latins. With him out of the way, Alexius Angelos was made emperor, and everyone seemed happy. Except, you know, the Roman people. Alexius was essentially a Latin puppet, and when he could no longer pay them what he'd promised, they turned on him. To stop the Latins from being invited in to garrison the city, Alexius Doukas, also known as Mortsouflos, murdered the emperor. He told the Latins to leave, they didn't, and they sacked the city. When this news began to filter out to all the islands and provinces of the empire, various other governors decided to go it alone or to seek Latin or Turkic help. We are now faced with a Roman world divided between something like 13 different rulers. Fortunately, for those who enjoy clear narratives, this number will slowly be whittled down over the next decade or so. but it will take a little time to get there. When I thought about how to approach this period, my mind drifted back to the heady days of 2008, when I went to the cinema to watch a film called Vantage Point.
The President of the United States has been shot.
We need your camera.
You saw the shooter.
There was something in that window.
I saw something too.
We have to respond.
You can't give the order. You've been shot. We risk telling the world that you weren't really there.
We weren't there.
We need you to tell us what's going on.
The premise was that the US president was assassinated during a diplomatic visit to Spain. In order to find out what happened, who did it, and what was really going on, we would see the story from the point of view of several different characters. The film would reach a moment of high drama, and suddenly we would jump back to view someone else's vantage point. The movie was so-so, but the idea of flashing back to an inciting incident to then move forward with a different character's story seemed like a useful framework to deploy here in 1204 AD. So, I'm going to use this bit of audio.
The city has fallen.
The city has fallen.
To indicate that we are traveling back to the sack of Constantinople and beginning a new journey with a new protagonist. I think that will be a helpful way of telling the story that follows. Eventually, we'll reach a point where the sound effect will go away and we'll be moving forward with only about 3 or 4 different states we need to cover. And eventually that will narrow back to just one. This podcast is dedicated to covering the history of the Byzantine state rather than its people. So there would be an argument for simply following the government forming at Nicaea, since they will eventually retake Constantinople, and are traditionally viewed as a continuation of the Roman government. But it's really important to remember that that was not clear at the time. Not at all. In fact, the reality in 1204 was that suddenly a huge vortex had opened up. Men had been looking to Constantinople for political leadership for 900 years. Now that authority was gone. The Latins had taken the city, but that was all they controlled, and no one knew if they planned on staying, or what their administration would look like if they did, or who would replace them if they didn't. Authority, power, and legitimacy were all up for grabs. Part of the reason for jumping between different people's perspectives is to see how each group or individual responded to this opportunity. Would they try to seize the center, or break away forever? I also think covering the sheer variety of states which formed in the aftermath of 1204 is vital to understanding the rest of Roman history. This is a period of extreme fragmentation, meaning that the empire which Manuel Komnenos ruled will never be fully put back together again. To understand why, we have to look at all the different responses to the fall of Constantinople, which means taking up several different vantage points. Let's begin with the most straightforward one.
The city has fallen.
The city has fallen.
Alexius V Doukas, the last emperor of Constantinople, was already on the road when the city actually fell. As you may recall, he had killed Alexius IV Angelos, the young man the Crusaders had foisted on the Romans. Doukas then challenged the Latins to a fight. This was what many of the people wanted. They urged their leaders to stand up for the empire and drive the Westerners away from their city. Doukas talked tough, but quickly realized that he lacked the manpower to seriously hamper the Latin position. So he spent his time reinforcing the capital's walls, hoping that the defenders' advantage would be enough to hold the Fourth Crusade back. It wasn't. The Latins broke through the wall, and Doukas' men fled at the sight of a heavy cavalry charge. The emperor asked the people to join him in a last stand, but the people had had enough of their rotten ruling class and looked out for themselves. Doukas furrowed his bushy eyebrows and decided the only sensible course of action was to flee. Mortsouflas, as he would be remembered for those eyebrows, gathered up his retinue and hit the road that night, leaving the people of his city to their fate. The following day, the city was sacked, while Mortsuvlos blearily made his way west through the Thracian countryside. The question was where to go next. Doukas had been emperor for just 2.5 months. His support had been entirely based in the besieged city. He had no real authority in the provinces. Understandably, he didn't want to give up his title, but who was going to take him in? He was a figure of failure and ruin. As his entourage made contact with the locals, the news that came back was not encouraging. The major fortresses of Thrace were being held by Byzantine officials, most of them loyal to the true emperor, Alexios Angelos Komnenos. Angelos Komnenos, as you know, had been in power when the Latins first arrived, and it was Angelos Komnenos who had locked Mortsuvlos up when the latter had been implicated in a coup attempt. Angelos Komnenos had then fled the city when it became clear that he was going to be overthrown. He had been at large in Thrace for the past 9 months trying to organize resistance, but without enough men or money to do much about the siege, he'd been forced to sit and wait. Mortsuvlos could hardly rock up to the gates of Angelos Komnenos' stronghold and ask for a chat, could he? He'd tried to usurp the emperor's power once already, then he'd murdered the emperor's nephew and failed to defend Constantinople from their mutual enemy. Now he was claiming the same authority as his predecessor, but had no men or money with which to assert his rights. Yes, everyone agreed that the most foolish thing Mortsuvlos could do would be to seek out Alexios Angelos Komnenos. About a week later, Mortsuvlos arrived at the fortress of Mosinopolis and sought an audience with his predecessor's predecessor. 220 miles west of Constantinople, Mosinopolis was a solid base from which Angelos Komnenos had been able to monitor news coming from the capital. Mortsuvlos made camp outside the walls and played the one card he had left. During the couple of months he'd been the Vasilefs, he had enjoyed an affair with a woman named Eudokia Angelina. Eudokia happened to be the daughter of Alexios Angelos Komnenos. Now, Mortsuvlos wasn't mad, he didn't open with that. Instead, he mentioned that he had also brought with him the girl's mother, as in Euphrosyne Dukaina Kamaterina, Angelos Komnenos' powerful and influential wife, who obviously knew all about the affair. This was Mortsuvlos' gamble, that Euphrosyne would talk her husband into a deal. Let this usurper marry our daughter and become your heir. You can then both go on being hailed as emperor, but work together to fight the Latins. Doukas probably had no better option, and when Angelos Komnenos agreed to the marriage a few days later, he must have been delighted. Perhaps he really could work with his new father-in-law to retake Constantinople, and he'd be remembered not as a failure, but as the saviour of the... let's not even bother. Mortsuvlos was invited into the imperial quarters and told to relax. Then Angelos Komnenos sent his men in to remove Doukas' eyes. Angelos Komnenos was not sharing power with this miserable usurper. When it became apparent that the Latins were going to set up their own administration at Constantinople, Angelos Komnenos gave the order to move out. His retinue, now boosted by having his wife and daughter by his side, headed west for Greece. Mortsuvlos was left behind, with a small number of servants and hangers-on. As the Latins closed in on Mosinopolis, the former emperor made a pathetic attempt to avoid capture. But refusing to give up all his finery, he was soon located. The crusaders dragged the former Vasilevs back to Constantinople, where they decided to put him on trial for his crimes. He had, after all, betrayed his liege lord and murdered him, a clear case of treason. Mortsuvlos responded that it was Alexios Angelos who'd committed the treason, betraying his own country to the Latins, something many Byzantines agreed with, but to no avail. The Latins sentenced him to death and began to discuss how best to dispose of him. Hanging? Drawing and quartering? Supposedly the Doge himself, Enrico Dandolo, commented that for someone so high-born, only high justice would suffice. When the Crusaders had first walked the streets of Constantinople, one of the many wonders which had impressed them were the carved columns standing in the middle of two of the public forums. These columns depicted, in spiral reliefs, the campaigns of the Emperor Theodosius I and his sons against long-forgotten barbarians. The statues representing those emperors, which stood atop the columns, had long since fallen down, and to the Latins' surprise, hermits now stood in their place. These stylites had been offering prayers to God on behalf of the Roman people, and their presence had given Dandolo an idea. The blind Mortsouflos was taken to the Forum of Theodosius in the centre of the city as a crowd gathered. He was pushed toward the column which stood at its centre, erected some 8 centuries earlier. He was then led up the spiral staircase of the column's interior, trembling as he went. He was led out onto the platform over 100 feet above the ground below. He felt the wind on his face for the final time and was then shoved off the side. His body plummeted towards the marble below and then he was gone. The remaining residents of Constantinople had been encouraged to bear witness to his death, to let them know that their political leaders had been vanquished and that their new Latin emperor was the only authority in town. Of course, like most statements which the leaders of the Fourth Crusade had made, that wasn't entirely true. Next time, we'll take a look at a different vantage point. While you wait for the narrative to fully kick in, why not check out the Lost Roman Heroes podcast, as Matthew and Matteo remind you of those who did great service for the Republic without shouting about how great they were. And some, of course, who did. Check them out at lostromanheroes.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.